fight sounds and interviews and poetry and different things with these Dada sounds, and I called it Dadali.
I must absolutely listen to it and share this with the public. You say the artist, what other than the poetry, what did he do?
Oh, I think in particular that, but I think even in the ring, I would say he's an artist. I mean, really.
He's a master.
Entertainer.
To me, he's what the Germans call in German Meister, you know?
Yeah, for sure. If you have to ask, then just, I don't know, it's kind of.
No. Normally when we talk about art, it can be painting. I mean, we're talking about normal categories of art, right? So I thought maybe that he was a painter because many...
He might have been, actually, but I'm not sure about the visual part. But yeah, no, I mean in total.
So you said you called him Dadali?
Dadali, that was the name of this program. And it was a summer program that... That's just one example, you know. So that was, I got very kind of impressionistic with the mixing of the sources on that one.
So you, what I saw on the internet, that you have this thing with technology and data and music. And what is your passion, Charles?
It's not really one thing. I can't really put me in a box. I don't fit in a box. Sorry.
No, of course you don't fit in a box. That's clear. But... Or like what is probably...
There's some keywords. I could give you some keywords.
Yes, please do.
Okay.
It's your portrait.
So Lovolution is definitely one of the keywords. And the other main keywords are wisdom flow.
Okay.
And there are particular meanings. And I have not specifically bridged this with, let's say, my radio and my sound production, except... The big exception is Sun Ra. In fact, Sun Ra is also a bridge there. And maybe I can explain a little, but essentially wisdom. So, okay, a little story, which is I have had quite a journey into and through so-called collective intelligence. And also with trying really hard and learning the hard way, failing to scale global community.
How do you define collective intelligence?
Actually, I don't try anymore. So we were trying to define it and we were trying to measure it. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I learned is actually it took me, so there's a lot of details and I try to be efficient here. Now I understand that actually there is no unified agreement or universal definition or even theory about what is intelligence itself. And so there's no way to actually define or measure collective intelligence. Same thing with so-called AI, artificial intelligence.
Are we going to go that way?
Well, this is actually where we're all going in a sense, and it doesn't mean anything. It actually means so many things that it all cancels out. In other words, AI as a term, or here they call it ki, right? Ki, it's kind of funny because ki or chi is like really something different. But AI is a
K-E.
AI is a meme. It's a virus that's basically here to stay, and it's only growing. And I don't see the value in that term. In other words, I think it's meaningless and vague, and I'm always trying to be more precise and accurate, and nearly every conversation I'm having, trying to get people to at least think about the fact that no one really has a definition of what is AI. I have gone into this quite a bit, and I just think it's, ChatGPT, okay. I have very strong opinions about this stuff.
Me too.
And it's a big topic. It's an important topic because it has really an impact on our planet and on humanity. And some of these monolithic companies and CEOs and so forth are really bad news.
I agree with you. No, I was showing you that this morning, our local newspaper here in Zurich, 20 Minuten, 20 minutes, they are running an article on the alternative Swiss ChatGPT, and Swiss GPT, they're calling it. I have lots of reservations about that. I have to tell you, I've been working with computers since I'm 12 years old, and that's a long time.
Mm.
And I've been part of it. I used to be a Windows woman. I mean, like, really.
We have lots to talk about.
I know, I can feel it. But
with the Swiss thing, I want to know what's up with the data and how are they training the models? And
yeah.
I have to say, I'm not a technologist per se, but I've been hanging around with like the hardcore geeks for a long time. So yeah. It's kind of rubbed off on me. And I know a lot about, you know, I know the questions to ask and kind of where to look for what's going to really support people and not just people, but actually life. All life.
Well, there's a thing that right now ChatGPT, like everything else in our society, is geared towards profit. And that's the part that I do not agree with. And
it's a very specific contrast to collective intelligence, which is collective wisdom. And the wisdom piece, by this particular definition from a friend and mentor of mine called Tom Attlee, A-T-L-E-E, is based in wholeness, the idea of wisdom being good for the whole. Now, how do you even know what's the whole? Well, at least you want to think about it and have some awareness that there is something bigger and then try to go in this direction. It's not a fixed, static, necessarily measurable thing, but this idea of being good for the whole, it depends on the context and what is the whole at a given time or in a given circumstance. But wisdom supports the whole. And then the flow is literally to you know, over time and sort of have a dynamic aspect of it. There's one other name I'll drop because it's really relevant to my work and where what I'm trying to build on. And that's I'm not sure if you would have heard of a guy called Doug Engelbart. He's a really pioneer, visionary, one of the forefathers of modern interactive computing. And he's, to the extent that he's known, he's actually famous for inventing the mouse and the keyboard and the monitor and things like that. But these are like little tiny, tiny, tiny pieces of what he really did and what his vision was. So without really trying to go into it, he had this idea. He had a lot of these terms that were not very easy terms. But he talked about the dynamic knowledge repository and the networked improvement community. And these things have to exist together. In other words, you know, team collaboration is networked, it's through computers, and the knowledge repository had to be dynamic in flow, essentially, with this networked improvement community. And there were limits on the human side, on the social side of these systems and that he sort of envisioned and partly built. And so I see this wisdom piece, this wholeness, supporting the whole as a kind of social layer to go around this this model that Engelbart put out. So it's been a bit slow and it's not simple. It's not a straight lines, but this is where I'm trying to go.
Charles, what I wanted to ask you is, I believe it was Star Trek. There was this episode where it's the whole against the one, not against, but the captain had to choose whether to save one person or to doom everybody else. Isn't that a good one?
I didn't see it, but okay.
It has stuck in my mind.
Yeah, and why? And how does it come up now?
I don't remember. I can imagine that the one was not saved. But if you consider that, and there's lots of these stories, you know, running around on the internet that this guy that did something for this other guy 50 years ago, and it turned out that 50 years later he saved his son or he created penicillin, you know. So it's actually not a very easy answer, I believe.
Thank you.
There's something that's coming up here, which is, it's another big topic, but I've been actually studying intensively these last weeks, long-termism and transhumanism and all this kind of like really freaky stuff.
And you don't think transhumanism is dangerous? Sorry to interrupt you like this.
It's extremely dangerous. I mean, I bring it in here because of what you, it kind of made me, what you shared about the Star Trek episode and thinking in terms of the future. And some of these guys, mostly white guys, you know, are looking so far into the future that they're basically saying, it's okay that, you know, all these poor people and refugees or whatever, you know, that they can just die because it's like collateral damage, and we have to really think so far in the future when we colonized other planets and we're populating levels of magnitude beyond it's just it depends on your perspective.
You don't think they're doing that right now, especially with the COVID, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, they, of course, I do, absolutely. But it's only going more in this direction. So I guess, I don't know where we're going with this or what we're really saying, but yes, I'm aware of this stuff.
Where we're going with this is that, I wanted to ask you before, what do you believe, first of all, do you believe that you have a destiny on Earth? If you do, what would it be? Or if you don't, my next question would be, or is, what is your contribution to the planet? My contribution is to bring, among others, to bring awareness to people, to the whole planet. And that people are also aware, sentient beings. It's not only the human being.
Actually, I can just bring back in the primary keywords that I've already brought in and say my mission or destiny, perhaps, is to actually figure out the bridge between Lovolution and Wisdom Flow. And to not just figure it out for myself, but to actually bring it out and share it and spread it.
I believe that there is a big difference between mind and intellect. And I am a person that prefers to work with the intellect than to work with the mind. Because also the mind can be, in my world, it can be defined as ego, while the intellect is egoless. But my question to you is the following. So what would be your connection between wisdom and intuition?
Well, really, my interest in particular is not just on individual or personal wisdom. It really is about collectivity. And so then I think a lot about collective intuition. It's got to go in this direction. For a moment, with regard to collective intelligence, I co-founded, so there's a few things that led up to this, but in middle of January of 2020, so immediately before the pandemic tsunami came, then I, together with a co-founder, launched something called KikoLab, or the Collective Intelligence Collaboratory. And so just to say, it was a kind of epic journey that lasted operationally until the middle of 2021, and then it just crashed, and that's another story. But the point is, it was effectively, it became a regular weekly Zoom session, and I took my radio experience in particular, sort of hosting and moderating a whole lot of artists over along, all these years. And I was very natural in the Zoom space. And I am still. So I've done a lot of, programming and curation and production of conversations, often means sort of roundtables and panel discussions and this kind of thing. So, yeah, let's go. I mean, bring it back to the radio would be great. I've done a lot of this, and I have, lots and lots of people that we can invite and curate various kinds of conversations.
To me, I was really surprised when I heard that you have a program in English. I was so convinced that there was nothing in English here at LoRa. So I want to thank you because you have opened a door for me. About 10 years ago, I did interviews in English about art for Radio LoRa specifically before I integrate myself to the station. But this sounds like, oh, this is amazing.
Well, I have a kind of a confession, which is just simply, thank you, by the way. And I was doing, more or less until the pandemic, I was coming in to do live programs regularly. And I was then, since I'm here at the station, on the microphone and announcing and back announcing what I'm playing. And I tried to provide basic information about who's performing, and support to artists and the labels and all of that, basically promoting, you know, the materials. I got out of this habit of doing mic breaks after sending in all these recordings, you know, and just
mind breaks. You said mind breaks.
Microphone breaks.
What are mic breaks?
Like what we were talking now on the microphone. Uh-huh. It's a mic break. I mean, in between the music, essentially. In other words, mostly my program that I send in, it's like long mixtapes with jingles.
This is fascinating.
So what I'm trying to say is, I'm speaking much, much less. I mean, the jingles are in English, but for the most part, very minimal mic breaks. So it's kind of back to really just the musical basis.
Charles, this is absolutely fascinating because it's like a black and white. You know, are you looking at which space are you looking at? You're talking about mic breaks, and normally I would say music breaks. So, you know, it's really beautiful, I tell you.
Well, so when I listen to the radio, or when I listen to music, I don't want to listen to talking. Now, if I really like the piece, then I want to know what it is. So it's kind of a tough choice sometimes. But I want to be immersed and have an experience and take a journey. And that's what I provide for listeners.
Are you also the type of person that gets high on life and not on drugs?
Oh yeah, well, life
you don't
is
have to answer.
never ending inspiration for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. From your absolutely professional point of view and all your expertise, what would you suggest for Lora as a whole to become an even better, or to become a very, very good radio station?
I think it's a great radio station. And I also have to confess, I don't get to listen to very many different programs. So I can't say I'm really the best person to offer kind of the holistic feedback, but everything seems great. I mean, it's a great place to hang out when I'm here. It's a great studio, and I appreciate the communications and the various activities that I hear about. I don't get to participate in so many, but I'm excited for the birthday festival and all of that. So that's what I can say.
So let's plug in, huh? Because dear people, maybe you know, and if not, you're about to find out, Radio Lora has over 200 persons working voluntarily for the radio station. And I'm very proud to say we have between 20 and 22 different languages, which is fantastic. On Tuesdays, we have what we call Martes Latino, Latin Tuesdays. Also, again, si te gusta el español, acompáñanos. We need more people. And there is so much to give, so much to give here. So going back to the feast, on the 22nd and 23rd of September at the Rote Fabrique, there's going to be music and panel discussions. I want to be there too. I want to be there for the panel discussions. And I invite you to be present. It won't take too long. Because I know you're a very, very busy man, and I appreciate that you're here too, by the way. all in a nutshell. And I think it's amazing. If you think of Switzerland, what we are, I do consider myself part of Switzerland, what we are and how we have gotten here, and especially the non-alternative scene, it's very conservative. Mm. The fact that Lora has survived all these years. Not only it has survived all these years, now we have other sister stations in Bern and in Winterthur and in Basel and other cantons, you know?
Are they like spin-off stations, or what? How would you say?
I would not necessarily call them spin-off. I would say they are also alternative grassroots stations.
Okay, so it's kind of a network, let's say.
They are a network, and they exist thanks to Radio Lora. Now, here I want to give a shout out to two people. One of them is Roger Chavinsky, that he was one of the first pioneers, you know, pirate stations. But in my research, I found out that Patrick Frey, who is a publicist, and he used to be a comic, and he has obviously also different activities, that he was the absolute, absolute beginner, the one that's the initiator of this what we have today, no? This grassroots beyond left, let's call it.
Up, down, left, right, yeah.
I want to call it let me tell you, Charles Blass, alternative, complementary at the same time. And it's not contradictory. So we are complementing what the others don't have, and it's alternative because we are offering other than what the others have.
And I just have to say also, I've always done non-commercial radio, always done community listener-supported radio, and this is where it's at.
The idea of an audio portrait, for me, in your case, is you're a person that have contributed a lot to Radio Lora and therefore to the betterment of Zurich. And if you do music, that's a non plus ultra for me. Because music is also like smiles, it's a universal language.
It's life itself.
And it's life itself. So,
yeah, I mean, as I said, I definitely emphasize the rhythms and the polyrhythms and the grooves strongly coming out the gate from midnight, at least till 3 or 4 in the morning. You can definitely dance. Don't expect any particular styles, you know. You must be open to surprises when you hear my show. You know, there's continuity in the sound.
That's the way it should be. Actually, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you is there any possibility that you teach us about all these rhythms and blues and whatever? Because I have heard, of course, terms like house and, you know, but you have mentioned a lot of words that I had never heard before.
Oh, I'm not sure which words those are, but I'm...
Well, there's a recording now.
Yeah.
I can play it back to you. I'm serious about this possibility.
I'm open to this. I think the first thing is to check out my shows, to listen to some of the archive playbacks, and that's the best way to learn initially, but I'm glad to...
Yeah, but let me tell you, I was thinking of something else, that Lora officially creates a workshop in which you give us this information, because it's part of education also, right? The more we know, the more we can give, I believe.
We can talk about this. Thank you for this idea. Let's see where we can go with it.
Okay, so because we're coming now closer to the 60 minutes mark, what were you expecting of this interview?
Oh, just to somehow
because you knew
share.
About it before I did, actually.
Really? I don't know.
I just found out a couple of hours ago.
Yeah. Well, anyway, just to make some sense out of, I do have a lot of experience and a lot of love, really big, big passion for radio. It's the thing, actually, amongst everything else I've done in my life that I did the most consistently and the longest. And so I guess I learned a few things, and I have, like you say, maybe some things to teach or to share. I tend to think in terms, you know, teaching is much better, co-learning. I think about learning together, you know, more than somebody like up above, you know, handing down something, you know, asset transfer.
Sharing the knowledge and the wisdom.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, I definitely have a lot to share and a lot of experience and really a lot of music. If it's the foundation is the sound. I approach my program as a healing, because I have very particular tastes in terms of musicianship and not that I could really define that, but yeah. So there's an intellectual aspect, but it's much more about the feeling than the intellect for me. Yeah.
If you could give 5 tips to people that want to create music programs here at Lora, what would they be?
Love the music. That's not really a tip. That should be understood and given. There's so many different kinds. I don't know how to respond. I mean, it depends if you want to get more intellectual, like we were saying, you know, and kind of go into research and history and legacy. I mean, these also, you know, oral history for me, you know, having a lot of discussion and interviews and hearing stories from you know, over the years, it's a vital way that the music has to stay alive, you know, in the legacy and the stories. So that's all really important. At the same time, like I said, I love to just experience pure music, immersing in that journey, which will have a minimum of talking and kind of information. And so it just depends where your heart and your head is, and then if you want to have a kind of a balance, a mix, a harmony of these elements, there's choices to make. So I can just offer these as like a banquet table.
That's fine. Charles Blass, I thank you kindly with all my heart for this amazing interview. It's this is the definition of spontaneity.
Yeah, well, I hope that everybody out there at least had some enjoyment and maybe could follow and make some sense out of all this kind of soup. Oh, that's the other thing, the big metaphor. So I guess you know what is gumbo.
I believe is a platillo from southern USA.
Yeah, it's like a stew, like a funky chunky stew with spices and different things. So one of my programs for a long time was audio gumbo. Mm-hmm. So that's just a concept I just thought to bring in. It's a soup, you know, with lots of spices and different chunks of different things in there.
Okay, so excellent. Yeah. So maybe would you like to share with the public your email address and your email address and if you want to go directly to your website.
It's okay. If you want to. I have an address set up for radio related things. It's sunradio@loveevolve.org, and again I'll spell Love Evolve. It's loveevolve.org. So sunradio, sunradio at loveevolve.org, loveevolve.org. Glad to hear from anyone.
And my name is Blanca Maria Müller Lagunes. I am one of the lucky persons that gets to work here at Radio Lora. And if you have any feedback, please let me know. My email is plumafina@gmail.com in case you want to send. We would love to hear from you. Okay, so blessings, musical blessings in whichever way you want to receive them.
Peace and love. Lovolution, baby. Thank you again for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
LoRa. Das LoRa war schon immer das, was die Sendungsmachenden aus ihm gemacht haben. Darum hörst du jetzt unsere Audioporträtreihe. So stellen wir verschiedene Personen in der Geschichte des LoRas in den Fokus und schlagen damit eine Brücke zwischen früher und heute. Exklusiv auf 97,5 MHz.
40 Jahre Radio LoRa. 40 Jahre Widerstand. Audioporträt mit Neda.
Ja, hallo, ich bin Neda, bin 33 und seit 2 Jahren im Radio LoRa auf der Programmstelle als Teil der Betriebsgruppe.
Wie bist du denn zum Radio LoRa gekommen?
Freunde von mir waren schon in der Betriebsgruppe und haben mir gesagt, dass ein paar Stellen frei geworden sind und dass ich mich doch bewerben soll. Ich war vorher auch so im kulturellen Bereich tätig und habe verschiedene Programme für Events, für Aktionstage und so weiter kuratiert und organisiert, und daher war es nicht so weit entfernt davon.
Und wo setzt du deinen journalistischen Schwerpunkt?
Im Radio LoRa selber bin ich Teil eines Morgenmagazins, Obacht um 8, jeden Mittwochmorgen, um 8, wie der Name schon verrät. Dort geht es mehr darum, Good News, wir berichten nur Good News, im Sinne von erfolgreichen Streiken oder Revolutionen und so weiter, um den Tag so zu starten, auch Agenda und Tipps, und die Zuhörerinnen schicken uns auch ihre Tipps zu, sei es Podcasts oder Filme oder Bücher, wir haben noch eine kleine Leserunde und so weiter. Und ich überlege mir schon seit längerer Zeit, Teil von Kompliza zu werden, von unserem feministischen Knastradio, weil das ein Thema ist, das mir sehr am Herzen liegt. Ja, ich hoffe, dass ich das bald machen kann. Und außerhalb vom LoRa bin ich Teil vom WAF, das ist ein unabhängiges Recherchekollektiv, welches gemeinnützigen und investigativen Journalismus macht.
Dann zum Radio LoRa. Warum ist es wichtig, selbstständige Community-Radios zu haben?
Ich glaube, auf 2 Ebenen sehr wichtig, oder mindestens. Vor allem glaube ich, dass der unabhängige oder selbstständige Teil sich auch im Inhalt reflektiert, was im Radio LoRa sehr stark ist. Das Radio kann sich so positionieren, wie es möchte. Und auch qualitativ und inhaltlich so produzieren oder so Sendungen machen, die Themen thematisieren, die wir möchten, die wir wichtig finden, die sonst in den Medien nicht so radikal, vielleicht oder so militant aufgegriffen werden können, so im inhaltlichen Teil, aber auch im organisatorischen Teil. So selbst organisiert heißt auch sehr viel Arbeit darin zu stecken, wie unsere Strukturen aufgebaut sind.